You're listening to a podcast from thebodypro.com. The following podcast was recorded at the 14th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections, also known as CROI 2007. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, please visit us online at thebodypro.com.
This is Bonnie Goldman, and I'm here with Dr. Ben Young, Assistant Clinical Professor of Medicine at the University of Colorado, and he works with Denver Infectious Disease Consultants, and he's also an expert at the body's interactive forms. Dr. Young, tell me a little bit about what you saw at CROI. I know that you focused a little bit on racial ethnic disparities and renal and other kinds of toxicities. Could you tell me what you liked most at CROI?
Well, this was an interesting CROI meeting for a number of reasons, and I think you've heard already from a number of our experts on new drugs and interesting data on breastfeeding and so on. One of the things that has been a subject of interest of mine for some time where several studies were presented at CROI this year was the issue of racial disparities in a number of the aspects of the HIV epidemic. And these included issues related to transmission of HIV, access to care, the kinds of medicines that people receive, and the spectrum of HIV disease and drug toxicity. I was particularly interested in a couple of studies that described the changing epidemic of HIV in the United States. There was an interesting presentation from Lucy Wilson from Johns Hopkins looking at data from this thing called the Multi-State HIV Research Network. And this is a study that is based in both urban and rural settings in clinics across the United States. And what she showed was that rural patients were much more likely to be black or Hispanic. And to me, very concerning was the observation that blacks in this country, at least in this cohort of patients, were significantly less likely to be receiving highly active antiretroviral therapies. And this suggests to me that there are significant barriers of race and ethnicity in terms of getting effective medications for HIV.
Did she focus on any particular areas in the United States?
Well, the study, if I recall, was based at five different clinics, scattered primarily in the east and south of the United States, but I don't remember the cities.
And next?
And then there was another study from Ellen Weevil from the New York City Department of Health that characterized the newly diagnosed patients in New York City in 2004. Perhaps not surprisingly, about 70% of the newly diagnosed HIV persons were male, but 85% of those new diagnoses were among persons of color. Specifically, about 50% were black, almost 30% Hispanic. And another area of disparity was that those patients who were newly diagnosed tended to have more advanced disease, and so 28% of patients were diagnosed with an AIDS diagnosis within 31 days of their HIV diagnosis. So, again, we're missing opportunities to intervene earlier in the natural history of disease. We're missing opportunities to prevent AIDS complications.
That sounds a very tragic number. I mean, New York City has been dealing with HIV from the beginning. You'd think that we would have gotten further in terms of prevention and outreach.
I agree with you, and I think that despite 20 years of HIV therapies and 20 and a few more years of knowing about the epidemic, we really have not done a very good job in prevention of HIV in this country or abroad. The fact that there are 3,600 new cases of HIV in New York City alone in 2004 to me speaks to this point. The fact that people are diagnosed with late stage disease commonly. This is not just New York City. Similar data come from our state in Colorado. Similar data about the racial disparities of new diagnoses also come from Colorado. In Denver, for example, black women are 25 times more likely to be diagnosed with HIV than white women. Black men 4 times more likely to be diagnosed than black women. Than white men. So these racial differences speak a lot to the need to get effective prevention, effective testing strategies into communities at great risk. And the fact that, that these disparities still exist means that we're not doing a good enough job at that.
Anything else that you saw that interests you?
There were additional studies looking that actually follows up on this time of diagnosis. There was another study from Johns Hopkins group that looked at just the CD4 count at the time the person first walks into the clinic. And again, in this setting, blacks consistently had lower CD4 counts at the first time they walked into the clinic, and they took twice as long to get to the clinic after their HIV positive test. And it speaks to the need to try to figure out ways to improve access to care and to minimize either cultural or medical barriers to accessing care. A additional study came from Elena Locina from the Massachusetts General Hospital, looking at a large cohort of patients in the National HIV Research Network. Again, we're pointing out that nearly half of blacks and Hispanics diagnosed with HIV in this country were diagnosed with CD4 counts less than 200, and a significant proportion of those diagnosed with CD4 counts less than 50. And the effect of this was modeled in her presentation, pointing out that these differences in time to diagnosis translates to survival differences, and that blacks diagnosed in this country were projected to live 1 to 2 years less than whites simply on the basis of delayed diagnosis and delayed access to care. And I think that that's, again, a significant barrier and problem for our HIV communities as we move forward into the fourth decade of HIV.
Did any of these studies put forward suggestions on how to change the situation?
Very limited ones, only to simply say that these disparities exist and that we need to recognize these. I think finding strategies that are culturally appropriate and sensitive to the needs of these communities is very important. I work quite closely with the black faith communities of Colorado, and even in our small communities, exists significant barriers, significant mistrust of the medical establishment, significant fear of diagnosis, significant stigma within each community. And these, while are common themes to HIV communities of all colors, appear to be significantly affecting communities of color in this country right now. Lastly, I thought that there were a couple of studies, or several studies, that addressed the issue of differential toxicity of drugs and changing or differences in the natural history of HIV in the African-American community. This is particularly of interest because of known differences in the rates of things like hypertension and kidney disease, differences in the frequency of bone density problems in different ethnic groups. So it was of interest to hear reports from the Johns Hopkins groups, one from Gregory Lucas, looking at the Johns Hopkins Clinic, and a second one from Joel Gallant, for reporting data from the Gilead clinical trials that looked at the frequency of kidney disease among African Americans, comparing them to Caucasian Americans. The former study found that the rate of kidney disease among HIV-infected African Americans was almost 12 times higher than that of the HIV-negative African American population. So again, HIV-infected blacks in this country are a significant risk of developing kidney disease. By contrast, and at least reassuringly, Dr. Gallant presented data looking at the very detailed prospective studies of tenofovir in Gilead-sponsored clinical trials, and pointed out that the rates of new kidney injury in patients who did not have pre-existing kidney disease was very, very low in either the 96 or 144 weeks of the Gilead-sponsored studies. And this was actually true in whether the patients received tenofovir in the study or either D4T or AZT.
I have a question. You said the kidney disease was 12 times higher in African Americans. Do we know why?
The study actually didn't speculate there. Mm-hmm. The study matched patients on the basis of their age and gender. Presumably, the rates of other medical conditions were similar, although that's not at least not in my recollection of the study. So it we do know that HIV alone can cause kidney injury, or HIV is called what's called HIV associated nephropathy, and it's clearly going to be that is a component of this HIV specific difference between within the African American community.
Something that you did mention, but I thought, well, if I'm an African American and I am 12 times more likely to have kidney disease and I'm given Truvada, is that an issue?
Well, again, the Gallant analysis suggests that if you don't have pre-existing kidney disease, you're unlikely to develop kidney disease over a 2 or 3 year period. And that, again, is reassuring. I think that as we move forward with HIV therapies, we are very fortunate to have a number of treatment choices, and we understand the characteristic side effect profiles of these medications. The overall risk of kidney injury from tenofovir is actually very low, and we and others have shown this in both prospective clinical studies as well as in large cohort studies. But your point is correct in so much that if you are an African American person with significant risk for kidney disease, and this is an important and, there were other treatment options that were equally well tolerated, then I think that I would be at least looking at those other alternatives to try to prevent kidney disease in this case. In other words, the idea is to prevent disease before it happens rather than treat it when it does.
So patients are monitored when they go into the clinic for kidney disease before they're assigned one regimen or another?
They should be, there are treatment guidelines to discuss just this point. Mm-hmm. And yes, patients should receive when we start initiate patients on therapies, we're really looking at a number of parameters before we prescribe medications, and hopefully tailor the medications both for tolerability but also to try to prevent or avoid the potential toxicities down the road. So patients who have pre-existing risk of kidney disease, if they have other options, we generally try to avoid using tenofovir. If they don't have those risk factors, then the use of tenofovir should be safe. And again, this is the general construct in the way we look at HIV therapies.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Bonnie.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from thebodypro.com. For more podcasts and full coverage of major HIV medical conferences, please visit us online at thebodypro.com.